C2M. Number 5B.
So looking over that fourth main subject and seeing it in relation to establishing a society and the human race and civilization, we are told here that the basis must be a unity with principle, that unity with principle is a relationship from man to God. So she speaks about the indissoluble unity that must exist in affection, that it is like as indissoluble as a mother's affection to the child, that can never be severed, can never be severed is the right term, is it? Cannot be put asunder, and that which is joined together in reality cannot be put asunder. If we have that unity with principle on a basis of scientific understanding, and not just on the basis of human values, and then she shows that has a tone of life and truth, that gives permanency to the relationship. Mostly she speaks about the permanency of the companionship, or that it lives on, that it lifts one's being higher and brings out what? When she talks about truth, it is all about companionship, about relationship from man to man, and from husband and wife as being genuine Christian scientists. And we begin to feel already a higher tone coming in, that she slowly wants to bring now the reader to the point where it says, look here, you have to have a unity with your synonymous terms. Only that is science. And when you build on that, then you have a sure foundation on which to build. And that relationship that are built on that foundation is permanent. Then we come to the next tone of life, which is a very interesting one too. It's the last tone that really builds on the mortal and human basis. With truth, we come into a completely different realm. So here is the question of life. Namely, now she takes up the question of the progeny and the human species, and shows that spiritual unity in life brings forth through exalted and refined affection. You see, exalted and refined affection as the ideas of life, a nobler human species. Nobler, that's the tone of life in the biblical note, and a human species, that's the tone of truth, the angels in heaven. It's therefore that great question which we say now, how can we bring forth a higher and nobler race? Because we feel that the race of today is decaying, that the culture is decaying, that we are much more on the verge of an abyss and don't know when we will fall down, or if we can keep on the on top or not. And so it is a question, what is necessary for a better humankind? And here she answers it. And she answers it right away on a very realistic basis, having both feet on the earth and not only the head up in the clouds. She says, and we come to the first tone of life as mind, namely, how can the progeny be improved? Her answer is through heavenly-minded parents, from whom the children inherit better minds and healthier bodies. So you can see She doesn't answer and say, well, you have to know that man is the idea of God and that God is the father of man. Here she brings it right down to our plane of existence and says, here you can start, and there it is, the point of departure. You have to start right on the mortal basis and see that we can improve this basis, and this is where we have a chance of bringing forth better children. She says here, the good in human affections must have ascendancy. You get the tone of life here. Must have ascendancy over the evil and the spiritual over the animal. For the first time, she takes in the animal nature of man and says, there it starts. Naturally, the sexual reproduction is an animal nature that has nothing to do with the human nor with the divine. It is the same process as with animal. So she says, in order to improve mortals and have a better mortals, you have to start right away with an ascending sense over evil, and within yourself nurture the spiritual over the animal, or happiness will never be won. Namely, the attainment of this celestial condition would improve our progeny, diminish crime. So it says, where it starts is with the parents, not with the children. If children are criminal, it's usually because they have a bad education or they have a bad starting point. They were perhaps not desired, they were not wished for, and so it is not so much the children, then the parents that have to see the right attitude. And give higher aims to ambition. Can you see, the attainment of this celestial condition would improve our progeny, diminish crime, and give higher aims to ambition. Every valley of sin must be exalted, and every mountain of selfishness be brought low, that the highway of our God may be prepared in science. The offspring of heavenly-minded parents, can you see, she goes right back to the cause, to the Creator, it's the heavenly-minded parents, they inherit more intellect, better balanced minds, and sounder constitution. You can see, a better mentality or heavenly-minded parents bring also forth more intellect, more balanced minds, and sounder constitution. She accepts here the law of heredity, the mortal law of heredity, and says this law of heredity actually works in the human, in the mortal. She doesn't do away and say there is no law of heredity at this point. She will do that when she goes further. Then she will show how to deal with the law of heredity. And naturally, we too have to know how to deal with the law of heredity. And each one of us has to know how to deal with the law of heredity. Else, we give in to that law which says, well, as the parents are, so the children are, and we inherit from the parents our abilities, our intellect, our emotion, the health of our parents, the diseases of our parents, the weak characteristics and the strong characteristics of our parents. She accepts here, which is necessary to state the law of heredity at this point, and said, even there you can start. She doesn't say this is the end of all. She doesn't make of it a final law, but she makes of it a mortal law and says this has to be taken into consideration. Therefore, we see afterwards that when we really want to free ourselves to be born of parents, that we naturally can then go further, we can go to the ninth chapter of creation, and there we can free ourselves from the fact that we are under the law of heredity, that we are just as the parents were. And so this is something that everyone has to do. That treatment everyone has to give to himself over years and years, so that that law of heredity, which functions on the mortal plane of things, that can be overthrown through the divine law of being the heir of God. So all of us are born mortally. All of us that sit here are born of mortal parents, and therefore under the curse of mortality. Therefore, each one of us has the right to see that we are not from human parents, not from mortal parents. I began to see that right away as a young student. I freed myself as well as I could, and I would constantly say, I'm not born of parents. I am born of the divine mind, of the parent mind, and not of heavenly-minded parents, and not of animally-minded parents. I'm not born out of an accident. I'm willed by the divine mind. The divine mind wanted me. The divine mind created me. The divine mind brought me into existence. The divine mind had a plan for me. The divine mind can only have a terrific big plan for me. And I accept, but that's not in this chapter, but I accept and for myself that mind has a great plan for me, that he wants me to glorify God, and that I'm here for the glorification of that divine mind, and that nothing human or mortal can touch that and can nullify that. And in this way I feel the divine mind wanted me. I'm a wanted child of the divine mind. I'm a wanted child of divine science, and brings forth within me the idea of divine science, so as to unfold the idea of divine science. And you just have to handle that. But from a mortal point of view, we can see here first life as mind that says, look here, your first step must be that in the act of bringing forth children, it is necessary that our mind is lifted up, and lifted up as high as a mortal can lift it up. So the higher minded the parents are, the heavenly minded or heavenlier minded the parents are, the better for the child, not only for his character, but also for his bodily health. Then she goes on and shows a touch of spirit, namely that we must cherish the good. So, if some fortuitous circumstances places promising children in the arms of cross parents, can you see grossness, the counterfeit of goodness, of that which is refined, that is cultured in the arms of gross parents? Often these beautiful children early droop and die. Can you see it's still the relationship of creator and creation, of parent and children? So that the education of the children, especially when one expects a child, when the child is born in the first few years after it has been born, these are the times that give to the child really its form, its character, its whole inward attitude. These are the most important years. So it needs a refined mentality of parents, or else these beautiful children early droop and die. You can see the counterfeit of life. Like tropical flowers born amid alpine snow. And if perchance, no order in it, it's just chance, if per accident, perchance, they live to become parents in their turn, They may reproduce in their own helpless little ones the grosser traits of their ancestors. She shows really that it goes from one generation to the next generation, and that must be broken. That handing down gross traits from one generation to the next generation to the next generation, that has once to be broken. Or else they hand it down from one generation to the next. What hope of happiness, what noble ambition can inspire the child who inherits propensities that must either be overcome or reduce him to a loathsome wreck? With a question mark. The next paragraph says, is not the propagation of the higher species a greater responsibility, a more solemn charge than the culture of your garden, or the raising of stock to increase your flocks and herds, or to culture your hobby, or to have other interests, and so on, and so on. That's my further text. That's what one can see. That there is actually not always that solemn charge when the child is here, really to be parent to that child. That's one's interest of the father, of the mother, goes into quite different direction, or leaves it to just one of both to educate the children, whereas both parents, husband and wife, really should think of that solemn charge, really to give to that child everything in the way of noble ambition, of noble characters, of noble outlook, of noble aims, of higher ideals. If that is just left to the animal development of a child, to the organic development of the child, there is a neglection of the spiritual nature of man, the moral nature of man, and what hope is there for a child that does not yet know good from evil to form itself and to mold itself into a good character. Nothing unworthy of perpetuity should be transmitted to children. You see how she here shows there is a law of heredity. There is a law of heredity. And we are just blind Christian scientists if we always say there is no law of heredity, such a law doesn't exist. But Mrs. Eddy says, yes, it exists. And she doesn't say that that law of mortal heredity is the true law. She says there is that law. And you can improve that law by showing that you keep your solemn promise to give to the child the best you have, your time, your energy, your love, your ideals, your spiritual ambition, your spiritual aims, your spiritual goals, ideals in your life. All that should be transmitted to the child, and nothing unworthy should be transmitted to the child. She really talks to the parents in a very strong way and say, don't neglect your obligations. Don't neglect that. That child is dependent on you. That child is reflecting what you have in your consciousness and in your mind. It's just a reflection of the parents. Then we have another point, that the progeny can be improved by an improved morale of propagation. And so she goes right back to the sexual state of things and says, there already everything starts. There you have to keep the progeny in a pure mental state. She says the formation of mortals, that's the first degree, the formation of mortals must greatly improve to advance mankind. So even the the formation of mortal, the sexual propagation of mortal must greatly improve. Namely, how? She says the scientific morale of marriage is spiritual unity. So that must be kept. First, you have, this is the second degree. The scientific morale of marriage is spiritual unity. A child suffers enormously under disunity of the parents. Be it before the birth or after birth, the child suffers under disunity of the parents. It's very sensitive. The child is so sensitive to its surroundings that one has to be very careful what the surrounding atmosphere is. If, and it is an if, the propagation of a higher human species is requisite to reach this goal, she says, if. It's only an if. She doesn't really say that it must be so. But if the propagation of a higher human species is requisite to reach this goal, then its material condition can only be permitted for the purpose of generating. The fetus must be kept mentally pure, and the period of gestation have the sanctity of virginity. We hear here really that whole story of Mary and Elizabeth, how they kept the secrecy that the child is being born with themselves, how they kept that mentally pure, how Mary really elevated her soul to the Lord, and one can see how important it is really that the mother gives the necessary spiritual care for the child. The period of gestation is the most important period where really the parents and the mother's mind should be really very high, very exalted, spiritually minded, pure, so that the child gets the nourishment of the spiritual substance. Then after that comes the education of the child, which gives again a sense of principle. When the education comes, we have here the epitome. By educating the children so as to form habits of obedience to moral and spiritual laws. So the education is now necessary, and that education is obedience to moral and spiritual laws. It isn't just the education and giving the children a computer, but that is much more important, that they get a moral and spiritual exercise and the strict obedience to laws. She says, the entire education of children should be such as to form habits of obedience to the moral and spiritual law. Now she comes and shows to the moral and spiritual law, that they are educated into the straitjacket, so to say, of knowing that obedience to laws is really something that is of the highest value, that alone will bring really a good future and a good career, with which the child can meet and master the belief in so-called physical laws, a belief which breeds disease. So we have here physical law, moral law, spiritual law in one paragraph, and showing that we should educate the children not in the physical laws, in the laws of physical health, in the laws of the physical nature, but first in the laws of moral and spiritual law, with which the child can master the first degree, can master physical laws. So we imbibe, or the child imbibes right from the beginning, the spiritual sense of law and with which they can really then master their life. If parents on the other side create in their babes a desire for incessant amusement, to be always fed, rocked, tossed or talked to, those parents should not, in after years, complain of their children's fretfulness, or frivolity, which the parents themselves have occasioned. She is very hard at the parents in this whole tone of life and says, don't blame always your children how ill-behaved they are. Don't blame the children that they are frivolous and etc., nervous and so on. Look into yourself. Have you given to the child? Have you transmitted to the child the best you have? Or have you been running after the money? Have you been running after the business? Have mother and father been running after the business to earn a lot of money and put a little child somewhere into a nursery and so on? So that depriving really the child from the mother warmth and the father's strength and father's courage. Have you just considered a little babe as a little animal that will just grow up by itself? The child doesn't grow up by itself. Kaspar Hauser has shown that if the child grows up by itself, it just grows up by itself in the environment in which it is. And that can be very bad. The parents are the environment. The parents' mind are the environment. And they have the obligation to see that the child grows up under the right condition and the right surroundings. One can never be thankful enough if one has had a mother and a father that have really given all those obligations to the child and has handed down the best they had, whatever the best it was, what they had, but at least the best they had. So taking less thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, less thought for your body, what ye shall put on, will do much more for the health of the rising generation than you dream. It's not enough to give the child the best food and the best clothing, the newest fashion. What they need is spiritual food. They need the warmth of the mother. They need the love of the mother, the attendance of the mother. They need the presence of a father. They need the strength and the straightness of a father. That is what feeds the child and what makes the child grow into a higher species of mankind. Children should be allowed to remain children in knowledge. That's a big thing. And should become men and women only through growth in the understanding of man's higher nature. And I don't know what the present situation is. Bevan doesn't allow the children to be children anymore when one expects the children already to be grown-ups and behave like grown-ups and to know everything as grown-ups and to know better than the grown-ups and not really give them, let them grow in the understanding of what man is and of man's higher nature. We let them grow up what the best technology is, but not what the best human man's higher nature is. That is usually neglected today. Technology has taken over and channelized a child's education already in technology and best technology and high technology. They will become just robots. They will become computers, but not computing spiritual ideas. That would be necessary. All right. We take up the subject again at 7:00.